few May Tynwald leftovers on agenda this week. We'll hear shortly some conflicting views on the 20-mile-per-hour zones proposed for the island, and later in the programme we'll hear how an innocent little question on economic growth developed into a full-blown warts-and-all debate. First, we hear some of DOI Minister Michelle Hayward MHK's opening remarks in the Tynwald debate.
20-mile-hour speed limit interventions are proven to reduce road danger, as measured by a reduction in collisions and in casualties. 20-mile-an-hour limits also contribute to positive public health outcomes, including active travel, play, air quality and noise reduction. The first challenge for the department was to identify exactly what constituted residential areas and which roads were to be included. In order to do so, the department used the safe system approach set out in the road safety strategy, which supports safe speeds appropriate to the features of the road, the function it serves, and the physical tolerance of users in that environment. The assumption was made that most primary and distributor roads in urban areas would remain 30 miles an hour, unless specific criteria indicated that 20 miles an hour was more appropriate. We started from a position with residential roads that 20 miles an hour was the default, unless applying a criteria indicated that a higher speed limit was acceptable. The set of criteria considered three things: the place, the movement, and road characteristics. Consideration of place included the density of housing, the proximity of schools, residential homes, medical centres, and other community locations where there might be increased footfall or cycling. Movement criteria included consideration given to undue delay of public transport if a speed restriction were in place. And road characteristics included the presence and width of pavements, the presence of crossing points, and the design factors of the road itself. The department commissioned external engineering consultants to examine all of the potential roads that met the criteria and to develop the traffic calming physical measures which would be needed for each of those locations. The feasibility studies covered 140 locations around our island. During 2020, the department developed their plans and briefed Tynwald members on those plans in July 2021. The plan centred on normal highway good practice at the time, which included putting in physical traffic calming measures, speed humps, bumps and tables, built-out curbs, traffic prioritisation and the like. However, there was some political concern to that approach during the scheme development. Furthermore, the significant level of funding required was not made available. The department therefore sought a more cost-effective and deliverable approach. Following developing professional practice elsewhere, the department determined to introduce a sign-only approach. This had the advantages of being cost-effective and deliverable in a reasonable time frame. Changes were made to how traffic orders were published, moving to a map system. As well as maps being much easier to read than a list of roads or parts of roads, this change reduced the need for hundreds of individual road traffic orders to less than a handful, each one covering part of the map. In February 2023, Mrs. Corlett brought her motion back to Tynwald. Mr. Collister seconded that, and again, Tynwald members reaffirmed their opinion that residential areas should default to 20 miles an hour and that the department should report to Tynwald with recommendations on the implementation. The department has consulted on plans in Port St Mary for many years and has implemented speed limit changes there in line with its statutory powers and in line with the sign-only approach. Today, to fulfil the resolution of Tynwald, I've set out the department's recommended implementation plan. The implementation plan is a living document and details the entire evolution of this scheme so far. When our map with recommendations about the roads changes was published in March, this caused some consternation. The statutory process for comments and objections received over 700 emails, covering the full spectrum of responses from overwhelming support and complaints that some specific roads weren't included, to those who considered that nowhere should be 20 miles an hour at all. Mr. President, we already have 127 miles of roads that are 20 miles an hour. Mr. President, as I've said in another place, whilst the department had followed the statutory process set out for publishing traffic orders, this obviously wasn't sufficient in this case. The high level of engagement made it clear that further clarity and community dialogue were needed. Mr. President, this is something that the department has moved to embrace in its latest iteration of the implementation plan. Honourable members, I've listened to your concerns and to those of your constituents about being able to evaluate the scheme and its impact on their neighbourhoods. And that's why I'm pleased to be able to explain the expanded consultation that's contained within the implementation plan to this court today. The plan clearly shows how consultation and then installation will proceed in clearly defined phases, allowing a minimum of 6 weeks local consultation before the feedback is considered and any signs are installed. The department's plan includes a phased approach to delivering these extended local consultation periods for all local authority areas in turn.
That was part of Russian MHK Michelle Haywood's opening remarks in the Tynwald debate. Rob Collister was disappointed Tynwald didn't back his call for greater consultation.
Yeah, it is disappointing because this goes right back to the beginning of March when the department just clearly published a traffic order with no engagement, no consultation. So even though today I may feel like I've lost, I've actually won in many ways because the department is now being forced to engage with local authorities. It is being forced to engage with businesses and with every stakeholder in order to see what changes we want to see in our constituency. Now, some of that may relate to 20 mile an hour signage. Some of it may relate to traffic calming measures. It's about the engagement. It's about taking on board everybody's views and then implementing something that we all can get behind.
What is your biggest concern now that this phased rollout is going ahead as proposed, especially for your constituents in Onchan?
It's more about what the process has happened previously. This has absolutely been a political train crash since the 5th of March when those traffic orders went out initially. It has taken a lot of work by a lot of MHKs, myself included, to get the department to engage with political members, but also, more importantly, to engage with the public. And I'm hoping that the department and the current DOI minister actually learned lessons about how to engage with the Parliament, how to engage with our communities, and if there are going to be implementations, to bring forward implementations that the community wants, because there are areas in Onchan that would benefit from lower speed limits, from traffic calming measures, but it's got to be done properly.
Now, you have criticised the Minister's approach to community engagement. Do you think there's still room to influence how future phases are handled?
Well, the Minister in the department today has announced a 6 weeks consultation with local authorities, with businesses and with other stakeholders. I want to actually see that very publicly now being unfolded. I want the public outside the chambers to actually engage with this process. If there are areas that want to be lowered, the speed limit lowered to 20 mile an hour, then that's fine, make their submissions. But it isn't just about reducing speed. As I mentioned in my speech, there are areas, Governor's Road needs a pedestrian crossing point. Traffic lights at Avondale Road need replacing because there's so many near misses. We also need another crossing point in Birchill, and we need one at Hillbury Road, which is near a school. So it's not just about reducing speed. We'd have to have a suite of options that our community want in order to make our communities a better place to live.
And with this plan now going ahead, what assurances are you looking for from the department?
Well, just like I've done, because as I say, it's in my manifesto for 2016 and 2021 that I do support 20 mile an hour zones in the right place, providing it does have that full engagement with our communities. What I will be doing over the next 6 months, we'll be absolutely monitoring this very closely. I'll be continuing to hold the DOI minister to account in respect of that engagement with that delivery. And I hope the minister will actually listen to politically elected colleagues in order so that we can feedback the concerns being raised to us and we can actually engage with our constituents with information we receive from the department.
Onchan MHK Rob Collister interviewed by Christian Jones. Douglas Central MHK Anne Corlett had rather a lot of words thrust into her mouth during the debate.
You started all this with the 20 mile per hour speed limit thing. It seems to have grown legs and possibly ran off in all kinds of directions you weren't expecting.
Yes, I think we heard a lot yesterday about what Mrs. Corlett really meant. And this started out really with Douglas Central. And I started campaigning because people were getting in touch with me. Overwhelming numbers in your inbox. So I went out and I knocked doors. And it became very apparent this was something that was wanted in our area. We've got five schools in Douglas Central. So the original motion, really, obviously my intent was and still is to get this into the areas around the schools in Douglas Central. But the motion opened it to allow other constituency members to pursue this if they wished. So this is where we are now. And that my amendment yesterday, really, when I was listening to the debate, it was very much around engagement and consultation. So it was a bit of a last-minute amendment in many ways, but I just wanted to give other constituency members that opportunity to have engagement and consultation before anything happens in their area.
And effectively, the amendment went further than the motion that the minister had put down. Rob Collister suggested that the department could have written the second two parts, because there were four parts to the amendment. Was there any involvement with the department?
No, the Minister for Infrastructure has been very, very sensible about the whole thing and not, you know, tried to influence. I did speak to her when I'd got the amendment sorted to see if she would agree with it, because there's no point in bringing it if she wouldn't. But no, DOI did not write any of that amendment. It was my amendment, and I take full responsibility for it.
And effectively, then, it allows for more consultation. I mean, the minister said she was going to consult anyway, but it allows for a bit more. Well, perhaps it would be easier if you explained what's in the amendment and how it all works.
Okay. Well, really, it was base of the amendment is that DOI must engage and consult with every local authority area, which was the best way to do it, I thought, because we need to involve local authorities, residents, businesses, schools. So they have to engage and consult before anything is implemented. So I felt that gave communities an opportunity to say what they want. That's what this is about. It's about what people want in their communities and the places that they live. And it's not all about safety. It is about the livability of our residential areas around our homes. There's a part in the amendment that there was the unclear maps, I think, set nerves jangling. Mm. So there was a part in the amendment to say they had to produce very clear maps, so and clearly tell people what they're doing, and that the end was that they must monitor the areas that they put it in and evidence them and report on them, which just is common sense. Why would you just do it and then leave it? So that was the basis of it. I did lift part of my amendment from the original implementation plan in part three. And I did that, simply lifted it out of the plan, because I wanted to retain it. I wanted to make sure it happens. And because I'd changed the initial receive and approve the plan to simply receive the implementation plan, I wanted to get approval from Tim Wald that actually we want to retain that particular part of the implementation plan on the face of an amendment.
And I think both the minister and I think Gary Cluett probably was the first to mention this, talked about, I think, was it Onbees, I think, only in my backyard, basically the concept being, because again, Stu Peters had asked for the figures and the minister was loath to give those figures because effectively, if you ask everyone across the island, do they want 20-mile-an-hour speed limits in most places in the island, they'll say no, but they'll probably say yes to one in their backyard. So only in my backyard was the phrase.
Yes, and I guess you have to be careful about that. But, you know, my main motivation has been, when you look at Douglas particularly, it's a lot of older houses. Now, you take the constituency where you live, there's a lot of new housing estates which are automatically 20 mile an hour. South Douglas is the same, actually, lot of new, and there's some social housing, which is automatically 20 miles an hour. In Douglas Central, we have essentially estates like Ballabruy next to Ballacameen. There's no 20 mile an hour there. That is a home zone. In fact, most of Central Douglas is a home zone, because the residents are around the schools, which is as it should be in a town. So I think really what I'm trying to push this back to is, what do you want in your community? tell your MHK, tell your local authority representative, and hopefully people will get what they want.
The minister seems, well, was certainly putting forward the view that just putting up the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit signs actually will work. Now, this runs contrary to what has been previously said by the department, in which they said, well, if there's no point putting a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit sign up, you need to do more than that. It either needs to be enforced or the road needs to be engineered. Have you been convinced by the minister's changed position?
Well, I think it's about affordability too. We've only got so much to spend. But with the consultation we had in that large part of Douglas Central was about living streets. So the consultation was also about one-way streets, traffic calming, humps and bumps. And that was very much, I've only had small support. That was very much put to one side. But the 20-mile-an-hour question, 77% agreed with. So for me, what I've always said, put up the signs, see where the problems are, and that's my monitoring bit in the amendment, see where the problems are and address them as you go along, rather than trying to preempt things and just really turn people against the whole idea, because they don't like the idea of one-way streets. And certainly in Douglas Central, the plan that they had, I absolutely supported not having them, because it actually prevented people from getting home. They'd have to drive right around the edge of Douglas to get back to their home. That's not what people are looking for. So I think this is a sensible approach. Put the signs up, change the speed limit, identify the problems and fix them where they arise.
That was Douglas Central MHK and call it finally Treasury Minister Alex Allenson MHK.
There was what appeared to be a fairly innocuous question on the order paper in relation to government targets, in relation to growth in the economy, and that developed into quite a feisty exchange.
Well, it really did, because the original question was about what we anticipate gross domestic product, GDP, to be this year. And it's difficult to know, because in real terms, you've got to count in inflation, and obviously we don't know what that's going to be like in the next 12 months. But I think you're right, it broadened out into a wider debate about the state of the economy, and particularly some people's concerns about financial services sector with increasing regulation about money laundering and things like that. We've seen fines and things like that being brought in by the regulators, but also the e-gaming sector, and we've seen a reduction in the amount of licenses and some high-profile involvement of the police in one or two organisations who've been linked with organised crime. And so there were some concerns there. But what I tried to stress was that really our economy is still very resilient. It's still very diverse. It doesn't rely on one particular sector in total. And it has huge strengths and also huge potential, as does our people and our community. And I remain very optimistic about economic growth. The secret is actually making sure that people see the benefits of that, whether it's increasing wages, whether it's increasing jobs, or whether it's increasing public services.
The members weren't wholly with you on that journey.
Well, when I gave the budget speech back in February, I talked about what I saw as a bit of a worry about pervasive negativity, either here and across and on social media, that everything is terrible and everything is falling apart. And actually, I'm very optimistic. I think we have to try to create the right atmosphere for business confidence to drive our economy, but also consumer confidence as well. And so it's not a false pretense I'm trying to put on. I think it is sometimes quite easy for people to talk themselves into a recession. I think when you look at our economy and the way it's bounced back from COVID, the way we supported it through the pandemic and also supported it through a massive increase in inflation that we saw following the war in the Ukraine, we're in a much better position now. The secret and the whole idea of the Arnhem Plan is to drive that economy forward, but to make sure that everyone can benefit from it.
And I guess some of the big events that have been happening over the last few days, not least the New Deal that the UK has reached with Europe, might actually create more opportunity for growth.
I mean, some of the key functions of government are to have and to instill that sense of certainty, business certainty, and people's ability to plan ahead and invest for the future. I think you're absolutely right. With so much uncertainty, particularly over trade deals and aspects like that, it's been very difficult for people to plan ahead. I was actually, you know, quite heartened to read, I think it was on Manx Radio, that some of the local fishermen are thinking that the new trade deal that was announced this week may benefit them, because we know that quite a few of the lobsters and crayfish and prawns that are caught by them and scallops end up going to European markets. And so if that process is made easier and less bureaucratic, then it saves them time and money. So I think there is a lot of positivity now looking forward, certainly in terms of the economy. When you look at the jobs available, the investment in our economy, it's all there. And it's government's job to try to encourage that as much as possible.
I suppose the other thing that's in the news at the moment is the President of the United States trying to end the war in Ukraine. And of course, that has been your government's go-to excuse for why perhaps things are not as easy as you might have liked. I mean, this would be tremendous. Obviously, it would be a tremendous thing for Ukraine if this conflict was resolved. But it would also assist in terms of global trade and the Isle of Man's position.
What we saw in the war in Ukraine, obviously, was people dying, you know, absolute aggression against the civilian population there. From our perspective, we saw that instability right across the world, but also huge increases in gas prices, which had knock-on effects with inflation here and around the world, and also with energy prices. That's why governments stepped in. That's why we were the first ones in the British Isles to freeze electricity prices. That's why we regulated the gas market as well to adjust that and try to protect the consumer. I think if we can have that longer-term stability in terms of energy prices, that would, again, help our local economy, but that doesn't distract from our need to get energy security, because I think it's a bit of a wake-up call, and so we need energy security, we need food security, and we've talked quite a bit about that in Intimworld. We are a small island, we've always stood on our own feet, three of them, but we must make sure that we look after our resident population and our community, because although the signs from the Ukraine look a bit more hopeful than they've been in the past, we've also got, you know, aggression right across the Middle East and across Africa, and that can spill over in various ways to affect us.
And I certainly wouldn't want to be accused of talking the island down, but I mean, you mentioned there the agriculture industry. I guess if you spoke to most farmers, they would say that they are struggling and they really need more by way of support to help them in the current situation. We heard examples this morning in Tynwald, the examples in the questions that you were being asked of what was believed to be excessive regulation and bureaucracy in various parts of the finance industry. Putting on rose-tinted spectacles is one thing. Surely to goodness, though, you have to acknowledge that there are people with real concerns in the Manx economy, and something needs to be done to assist them.
Absolutely. I'm not saying everything is rosy. Absolutely not. We've gone through some incredibly difficult periods as a nation, and we will continue to do so. Some of the stresses that we're seeing are not going to go away, particularly when you look at the demographic changes, the expenses of providing universal healthcare, education, making sure we've got connectivity. All those are ongoing issues the government are addressing. What I would say, though, is for any of your listeners who are concerned about the economy, go on the government website, look at the economic dashboard. We have all the real-time data available there in terms of the number of people in jobs, the number of people on unemployment benefit, their ages, how long they've been in there, the state of the government reserves, what they're like, in real terms. Those are upgraded every week. And all that information is made available. And if you look at the long-term graphs, what you will see is remarkable stability for our economy and our people over the last 10 years, and particularly over the course of this administration.
One of the other questions that you answered was in relation to the housing deficiency payments that local authorities get, which effectively is government filling the gap between what rental income can provide and what local authorities need to develop public sector housing. Are you convinced that the changes that you announced in the 2025 budget are going to result in a freeing up of the system? Because many local authorities, I think, were complaining that effectively everything seemed to have ground to a halt in the way things had been administered.
Yes, I mean, I talked to local authorities as a Treasury Minister, and they expressed that to me, that they were putting in applications to the Department of Infrastructure, who then weren't sure whether they had sufficient money, sufficient revenue budget to provide that subsidy for social housing, as you've said. I think that there is obviously an element there of making sure that we're charging fair rents for people, so we can reduce that deficiency, but also to make sure that it can be used to build new social housing. And so I am very hopeful that the changes we've made that have been welcomed by a lot of the local authorities I've talked to are at least the start of that. Also in the budget, we committed to putting more money in every year to that external fund, and making sure that the Department for Infrastructure can approve the right schemes, can come online a lot quicker to address the needs of local communities in terms of affordable and accessible housing.
That was Ramsay MHK Alex Allenson. So what do you think? Is the economy safe in the government's hands? Are you as optimistic as the Treasury Minister? And what about the 20 miles per hour residential zones, an important safety measure, improved community living, or an unnecessary nanny state intervention? For now, I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayu, thanks for listening.